Hi, you're listening to It Happened to Me, a rare disease and medical challenges podcast. The mission of our podcast is to support you, our listeners, and to create community as you confront the toughest challenges in life. All of us will experience health hardships. The real question is how we adapt. That's the focus of It Happened to Me, which wants to help you overcome limitations and live a full and satisfying life. Drawing on their own health challenges, co-hosts Kathy Gildenhorn and Beth Glassman interview guests who share stories and research to help you succeed in the face of difficult health obstacles. It happened to me. I'm not alone, and neither are you.
Last episode, we chatted with Matt Goldstein, who is the CEO of JScreen, which is a genetic screening and educational program out of Emory University that offers comprehensive at-home testing. Joining us today is his lovely wife, Myra Sachs. Myra and Matt are the parents of Javi, who passed away from Tay-Sachs disease in 2021. And Myra, I want to extend our deepest sympathy.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Myra is a writer, a coach, and an activist. She and Matt live in Massachusetts with their second daughter, Kaya, and their son, Ezra. In the wake of their first daughter, Javi's death, Myra Sachs wrote 57 Fridays, which is a memoir written to escort its readers through life's most painful realities, to show us the beauty and fullness that can be ours simply by learning to coexist with grief. Myra graduated with a BA in government and All-American honors in 2010 from Dartmouth College, where she captained the women's varsity soccer team. She earned a postgraduate Lombard Fellowship in Granada, Nicaragua, with Soccer Without Borders.
Following her lifelong passion for sports and social justice, Myra joined Squash Busters, Inc. in Boston in 2013, serving as their chief programming and strategy officer. Myra has an MBA in social impact from Boston University and is trained as a certified compassionate bereavement care provider. She served on the board of the Courageous Parent Network and is the founder of Emotion, Inc., a nonprofit program with a mission to ensure community as a right for all grieving people. Thank you, Myra, for joining us today on It Happened to Me.
First, Myra, we do want to extend our deepest condolences on losing your daughter, Javi. In this episode, we want to honor Javi's memory by educating our audience about Tay-Sachs disease. We also want to talk about your memoir, 57 Fridays, and importantly, about learning to coexist with grief. For those who don't know about Tay-Sachs, Myra, can you please explain what the disease is and how it affects individuals who have it?
Yes, of course. And thank you, Kathy and Beth, for having me. It's an honor. Tay-Sachs is a neurodegenerative disease that quite frankly destroys everything. So it's true what you might Google about the disease. People can't talk, they can't see, they can't hear, they become paralyzed, they get seizures. And Javi had what's called infantile Tay-Sachs disease, which affects infants and typically has a lifespan of about 2 to 4 years. And importantly, it's an autosomal recessive disease, which means it's an inherited genetic disease where both parents need to be the carriers of the genetic mutation for the baby to have even a 25% chance of inheriting the disease.
So Myra, that gets me to the question about genetic testing. Can you tell us about your preconception genetic testing?
Yeah, I of course. So I actually was in my evening program in business school at Boston University at the time. And I was sitting in one of my late night classes when I received a call from my doctor's office that it was a nurse calling to share that I was a carrier for Tay-Sachs disease and actually two or three other horrific genetic diseases. And this was carrier screening that I had undergone before I was pregnant or before Matt and I were even really talking about when we would get pregnant. It was just part of what it meant to grow up as an Ashkenazi Jew, knowing that we needed to do our preconception genetic testing. And that was actually a privilege, that all the work that had been done in previous generations to ensure that this wouldn't happen. And so I got the call, learned that I was a carrier, and that the appropriate next step was for Matt, my husband, to be tested. And so he was, and he was determined not to be a carrier. And so we were then told by his physician that we were in the clear, and that we could try and start to build a family if and when we chose to. And tragically, what we learned years later was that Matt's ordering physician had, in fact, just made an error and ordered the wrong confirmatory test for Matt. So he was misreported as not a carrier when, in fact, he was a carrier.
Does that happen frequently?
I would like to think it doesn't. Although the our situation was cause for a fairly significant, albeit fairly simple, actually, adjustment that the hospital system made to ensure that this would never happen again. So it was simply a technical update that was made as a result of Javi's life and death.
So I hope this won't happen again, is what you're saying. They made a change and that false reporting. So you, in fact, were a carrier, and your husband, in fact, is a carrier, which is how Javi got inherited from both parents, how she got Tay-Sachs.
Correct. And I was actually, I was 11 weeks pregnant with our second daughter, Kaya, when we received Javi's diagnosis. And so in the morning I was in, in with our neurologist, getting Javi's diagnosis. And in the afternoon I was in high risk OB getting a chorionic villus sampling of the fetus, to ensure that the fetus was in fact not affected. So.
And that is a test that is foolproof, that the results are indeed accurate. That she did, would not also succumb to Tay-Sachs.
Yeah. Yeah. Correct.
Oh, boy, that must have been a relief.
Yes.
So how was Javi's health when she was born? You're married to a doctor, and you both seem to be very involved parents. Did you notice anything to be different?
No, I mean, we were first time parents, and obviously I'm biased, but Javi was gorgeous when she was born. She was healthy and strong, and really she lifted her head and when she was born and looked at me with her big hazel green eyes, and the nurse at the time said, you know, she'd actually never seen anything like it. And so, the first year of her life was maybe typical of first time parents. It was exhausting, and there were moments of incredible joy and moments of frustration and anxiety and bliss and all the things. And we were really trying to keep our type A tendencies at bay when, you know, Javi wasn't sort of meeting some of the milestones. But there was nothing until she turned 1 year where we we were overly concerned. It was at 1 year when she got the developmental delay diagnosis from the pediatrician. And that was when, that's what kicked off the sort of diagnostic odyssey, which resulted in the fatal Tay-Sachs.
And how did you and Matthew cope with the shock and the emotional impact of Javi's Tay-Sachs diagnosis?
I don't know. Is the short answer. And then there's
that's
a longer
an honest
answer.
No,
yes. there's a longer answer, which is that we really were on this 3 month diagnostic odyssey. So she turned one, we got a developmental delay diagnosis, and then we got a cerebral palsy diagnosis. And so we had been catapulted onto this new pathway of parenthood. And I had made sense of some world in which Javi would need a lot of extra support. And I just wasn't sure what it would look like, but I was sure she'd be here. For instance, right now I'm 35 mm-hmm. years old, and I assumed she'd be 5 turning 6 this coming fall. And so when we learned that Tay-Sachs was her diagnosis, and words like fatal and terminal became a part of her future and our future, I was incapacitated. But then very quickly, and I think because time really started to collapse on itself, our time with her would be so short, incomprehensibly short, that I started operating maybe from a different plane with all of the kind of motherly energy and strength that I could muster on kind of hyper speed, hyper depth, hyper clarity. And that sense, that vividness really, and that accelerated time horizon was what led to this idea that we ended up coming to, which was this notion of shebirthdays. And it was this idea that Javi wouldn't have, she'd only have 2 birthdays. And I, as her mother, couldn't wrap my head or my heart around that. And so what we came up with was this idea that we would combine her birthday with Shabbat. And we created what was called the shebirthday. And
that's where 57 yeah, Fridays comes yeah. from, your book.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Did you start writing the book and come up with this concept during Javi's journey, or was it after her passing that you decided to write the book? Tell us something yeah. about your odyssey, your journey.
Yeah. Once we came up with the idea of a shebirthday, we just organically ended up starting to write to her. So every Friday after, we would have her shebirthday and we'd put her to bed. One of us, we'd alternate every week, would write to her and would start, "Dear Beauty." And we would write about the week, about our feelings. And we would share those entries really with just our closest family and friends, and they're what got us from kind of 1 week to the next. And so 57 Fridays came out of those initial journal entries. And then after Javi died, I couldn't stop writing. And so I continued to write to her every day. And now the memoir is sort of the most embodied version of what I think it means to be a grieving person who deserves a community who shows up for them.
For them. How yeah. touching, how totally meaningful it is. And what does the book attempt to do for the reader? And then what did writing the book do for you and for Matthew?
Yeah, The book really attempts to give the reader a different way of being. And that reader could be a grieving person, or it could be a person who's trying to show up for a griever. It could be someone who has had the good fortune of not experiencing a tragic loss yet, and someone who wants new language and wants a different perspective and appreciation for what grief can feel like and be. It's an attempt to show a new way of showing up for people in our lives that's sacred and not scary, that's authentic and not superficial. And hopefully it can be a guide for others.
Oh, it's beautiful. Now, do your children understand what the book is, and have they ever read any of the entries, or have you read any of the entries to them that you felt they could handle?
Not yet. Kaya is 3.5 and Ezra's...
I thought they were a little
older. No, gotcha. Ezra's just about 18 months, but
it's
they're
a bit
like,
early.
No, it's a really beautiful question, because they especially Kaya, talks about Javi a lot. There's photos of Javi everywhere. She's incredibly integrated into our lives. And so, yes, with it, I really wrote the book. You asked, you know, what did it do for me? I think it not only does it kind of chronicle so many of our adventures, of our most intimate moments, but it also is, I really wrote it for Kaya and Ezra, so that they can know their sister in a way that they, wouldn't maybe have access to otherwise.
You are one strong, incredible mother and woman. I mean,
yeah, I don't know about that.
Unbelievable.
Myra, listening to the discussion of the Friday entries, I have to say, I mean, I'm a little weepy. I'll be honest with you. This is really a beautiful way to chronicle a life and to remember someone who is important to you and original. I've never heard of it before. And I'm dabbing my eyes for those of you who are listening. This is really very moving. So this discussion about coexisting with grief, how did you learn how to do it? Where did the skills come from?
Much of it is, well, too, I think some of it comes from the way I grew up, my parents, and the kitchen table education that was all about like being with hard things, being real, being connected to community, not shying away from hard, heavy things, and from like loving fully. There's no one more loving, more generous than both of my parents. And then secondly, Dr. Joanne Cacciatore, who was our grief therapist, who really gave us the language that I came to just become totally immersed in. Anything she recommended that I read, anything she said, I would dig into. And so really it became this psychoeducation around grief and loss that I was craving. I needed to understand what was happening, what I was feeling, and how I could turn towards, really that's coexisting with grief. How do you turn towards something and give it space and time that it deserves to engage with it, so that it doesn't become paralyzing, that it isn't so scary, that it is in fact energetic in nature, and the only way that it becomes that is by being with it. And then maybe lastly, my extended family and my friends and teammates and people who were willing to be with us, to walk alongside us, who said we're not afraid either, that we can hold a dying child, and we can appreciate her sacredness.
You know, many of our listeners face medical challenges. And I feel that what you're talking about, coexisting with grief, is also applicable to them. Would you feel the same? How do you feel about that? The challenges that people face, major medical challenges in their life. There is a mourning of a past life that no longer is available. And I wonder, with the lessons that you've learned, how you could help our listeners face their medical challenges.
Yeah, it's such a good, big, important question. I think that it's learning how to feel Learning how to access our feelings can be so empowering. Being incredibly specific about what we're feeling and getting underneath maybe what is a superficial feeling of fear that once we kind of unpack it, it actually is more about anguish or more about rage or whatever it is, I think allows us to start to trust ourselves. And when we trust ourselves, then we can become our own advocates, our children's advocates, our partners, in a way that can be really hard if we don't actually know what it is we're feeling or experiencing.
Confronting.
And
those adjectives that you picked, anguish and fear, really resonate. Both of those, I think, are really applicable. The anguish of what you've lost and the fear of what faces you.
Yeah.
And learning to accept those. I think that's a very interesting take and very powerful.
Well, thank you.
It's wonderful that you can be so honest about where you are so you can move forward. And I think.
No, I was just going to say we talk about like moving with as opposed to moving forward or
forward.
Moving on. Yeah, we talk about moving with like as a way to be. And so, it's that idea of integrating our losses into our future in a way that keeps them with us, you know?
And that's also something that those who are medically challenged need to do in order to be able to live with their new reality and still be able to live.
Yeah.
And I think it's so important. Did your training, I have to ask, as a certified compassionate bereavement care provider by Dr. Joanne Cacciatore, help you on your journey, help you write the book, process your grief? You seem that very taken with everything she had to offer you. Was it during this time, pre or post? When was it really integrated into your movement and your journey?
Yeah, and thanks to my sister-in-law, who basically stalked Dr. Jo until she would open up a slot for Matt and me. So we started having phone conversations with Dr. Jo when Javi was still alive. And so she was our therapist while Javi was still alive. And then so I was introduced to her way of being. She gave us permission to feel. She never, ever pathologized grief. So all of that was introduced very early on. And then after Javi died, Matt and I continued to see Dr. Jo as our counselor. And then I went on to get further education, because you're right. I was really, taken by the field of traumatic grief.
Wow. And then how does the Courageous Parents Network help support parents or caregivers? And did your work I know you're on the board. Did your work on the board of the Courageous Parents Network help you in processing your grief and being able to coexist with your grief?
So Courageous Parents Network was founded by Blythe Lord, and Blythe and her husband, Charlie, happened to live 12 minutes from us, and they were introduced to us by a colleague, a wonderful colleague and mentor of mine. Blythe and Charlie lost their middle daughter, Cameron, to Tay-Sachs disease 22 years ago.
No.
And so we were introduced to Blythe and Charlie actually just sort of a week after Javi's diagnosis. And so they have become family, a lifeline, all of the things. And then Courageous Parents Network has come into my life in a more professional capacity only recently. I'm now on the board, and I am just a massive advocate for what they do, and what Courageous Parents Network does is they really, they orient and empower parents and other others caring for children with any serious medical condition by providing really exquisitely professionally curated resources and tools like videos and podcasts and guides and blogs that pull from the wisdom of families and pediatric clinicians to help them navigate these just excruciatingly difficult experiences. So I highly recommend Courageous Parents Network. I really can't say enough about them.
Now, you're an extremely busy person. You also started eMotion, which is a nonprofit organization. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, eMotion was born out of this recognition that in Javi's life and death, there were really three elements of healing, I think, for us, and healing being an ongoing process, but is really movement, the power of movement, the power of community, and the power of ritual. And so eMotion takes those three elements, movement, community, and ritual, and designs programming, designs trainings to try to create a more grief-literate society. And so we run trainings and programs for non-grieving people, so people who want to get trained in our approach. And then we run what we call movement community models, which is a 10-week experience for grieving people. And it gives them a chance to get to know a community of grievers, not in a traditional kind of group therapy way, but actually using running or walking or swimming as the aerobic exercise with these kind of gently guided grief rituals and practices that that help them move with the experience. So it's new. Wow. It's only a year old.
Good luck with this.
But it's amazing.
When talking about ritual, it made me wonder for a moment, do you still do any Shabbat birthdays with your kids, with your family, kind of in memory of Javi, or just to kind of keep the ritual alive?
Yes, every Friday. Every
Friday.
Matt takes the kids to Rosenfeld's in Newton and picks up the challah. Kaya knows her birthdays. Yeah, we light the candles. We do it all. So it's
Oh, that's so beautiful.
It really is. I wonder, are you thinking about eMotion to help people who have loved ones going through hospice? Is that a future?
It's definitely a possibility. That anticipatory grief. And all of the accumulated losses that come with the reality that you're sort of bearing witness to someone you love who's dying. We've had one member of one of our groups who is in that situation. And so definitely we're talking about that.
And so this is an athletic endeavor. This is, you mentioned swimming or walking.
Yeah, there's definitely movement as part of the experience, and the movement is gentle, and it's based on whatever that participant, that community member can and wants to bear. So there's certainly no, it's not meant to be overly stressful or severe in any kind of way. But movement is so regulating. And so we use it as a tool for regulation when we're trying to be with really hard things.
Well, it sounds like a wonderful program, and I wish you very good luck with it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, I wonder, Myra, in closing, is there any parting advice that you'd like to share with our listeners?
I wish that you didn't have to listen to this. I think my advice is to just trust yourself, to try to quiet all of the external sort of pathologizing messages that we get about grief and loss, and to try to honor how big how big the loss is and how immense it is and how ever-changing it is, and try to find people who will honor that with you and to be gentle with yourself.
Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you, Myra. Thank you for opening up about your family story and sharing with us about Javi and about your book, because I think that 57 Fridays is such a beautiful, beautiful testament to your love for Javi, your love for family, and the importance of ritual in the entire process of traveling on a journey such as you and your family have been on. And I can't thank you enough as well for educating our listeners both about Tay-Sachs and about genetic testing and the fact that nothing is guaranteed, no matter how much we hope. There are risks involved continuously with everything. But I wish you such luck on your book, 57 Fridays. I know the release
Myra,
date,
when is it going to be? When
April,
is it going to be?
That's what I was just going to say. April. But April.
April 2nd.
April 2nd.
Yeah. April 2nd. We'll look for it. And
thank
we'll
you.
Absolutely.
Plug it. And I know that it's going to be a valuable resource for a lot of people.
For a lot of people.
Thank you for doing that for all
and
of us.
And I want to thank you so much for the concept of really learning to coexist with grief, because I think that's such an important tool for people going through incredible challenges in whatever form, learning to coexist with that grief. That new reality is just something you have to be able to process and be able to be honest with yourself about. And you've been so helpful in bringing up those issues. So thank you so much, Myra. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy. Thank you, Beth.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of It Happened to Me. We encourage you to learn more at ithappenedtomepod.com. Please use the contact form on our website to submit your guest suggestions, comments, questions, ideas, and feedback for the show. You can also email us directly at ithappenedtomepod@gmail.com. We would really appreciate it if you can leave us a 5-star rating and review on your podcast app like Apple or Spotify. This helps others in the rare disease and medical challenge community find us. It Happened to Me is created and hosted by Kathy Gillenhorn and Beth Glassman. I'm Kira Dineen from DNA Today, and I serve as our executive producer and marketing lead. Amanda Andrioli is our associate producer. Ashlyn Anokian is our graphic designer. And remember, it happened to me. I'm not alone, and neither are you.